Dakota has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
Hello and welcome to the 19th Hole Golf Show. My name is Ryan Ballingy. Sorry for being a little late on this week's podcast. We're 2 days later than usual, but happy to have you with us. You can email me, ryan@thegolfnewsnet.com. Check us out on our website, golfnewsnet.com. You can find my work at Yahoo Sports on the Devil Ball Golf Blog, sports.yahoo.com, which is a presenting sponsor of this program. You can follow me on Twitter, @RyanBallingy, or follow Golf News Net on Twitter and Facebook, twitter.com/golfnewsnet. If you're a subscriber to the show through iTunes or another podcasting service, thanks very much for being a subscriber. Please check out Golf News Net Radio, which is a 24/7 stream of golf talk. It's available on our website, golfnewsnet.com, on demand, golfnewsradio.com, and through the TuneIn Radio app. All right, so this week's show, we're going to try and delve into two topics. One is a bit personal, and one is Tiger Woods. And we'll get to Tiger Woods at the end here, because it's kind of been something I've talked about in radio appearances and in other places for the better part of this week. And if you've heard my voice, then you probably know what my thoughts are on the matter, but I want to save that for the end. I wanted to spend a little time on this show talking about an experience that I had, thanks to the folks at Adams Golf a couple of weeks ago down in Delray Beach, Florida, playing golf with Bernhard Langer. And they approached me, as well as five other folks, Adam Schupach from Golf Week, Tony Covey from My Golf Spy, and three guys who I didn't really know, Kane and Freddie and Andrew. Kane and Andrew from GolfWorks.com and Freddie from the gang at thehackersparadise.com, which those are all equipment sites, so if you're not in tune with that part of the web, that part of the golf web, those are great places. Those are the preeminent places to go find out about equipment. And we got an invitation to be able to spend a couple of days, really one day, with Bernhard Langer. And the original pitch concept I thought was hilarious, which was going to be called Weekend at Bernie's. And Weekend at Bernie's was going to be all six of us were going to fly in to Fort Lauderdale, drive to Boca Raton, where Bernhard lives with his family. And he's been there for over 20 years. And we would stay at his house for a night and play golf with him. That sounds like a bad idea, really, for anybody. But it was a creative one, although Bernhard Langer, through his agent, said, hell no. So the alternative was to have us come to Boca Raton, spend a day playing golf with Langer and having dinner with him. Basically an opportunity to pick his brain, and also a promotional opportunity for Adams to showcase their new hybrid called Red, which I now have in the bag. It is fantastic, and you can read my review about that at golfnewsnet.com. But the opportunity is really interesting because there are, and this is a little inside baseball, there are often trips that are somewhat like this, where, and they're called fam trips in the golf travel industry, where you can fly to a destination and they'll showcase the best of the best for you. They'll give you killer accommodations, they'll let you play great courses, you'll get great meals, you'll get to speak to the people behind the board of tourism or that own the courses, or a course designer will come in, and all of those things. And they're a lot of fun, and they often lead to glowing press in response. That's kind of the wink and nod here, is that if you go on one of these trips, you're tacitly expected to provide some kind of coverage of said trip in return. And so when you read a travel story, you know that's the case. Or you should, going forward now. Sometimes in equipment, that type of thing happens. And you used to see it more several years ago, especially with the TaylorMade folks, but Nike does this, Callaway does this, the others not so much, but those three do, where they will fly in reporters, some more mainstream golf, some equipment specific, and they'll demonstrate some piece of new equipment, a new driver, whatever the club they're trying to showcase is. And they'll wow you in the process. They'll fly you to a great destination, or they'll fly you to their headquarters and you'll get the inside scoop there, or you'll go to like a Vegas and get wined and dined a little bit, kind of like we were on this trip. Again, the expectation is you're almost going to cover yourself a little bit. You're going to cover the event that you're going to and give them the rub that they're looking for, which, again, tacit agreement. It's just something to be aware of. I don't think in any way it skews the coverage of those folks who go on those trips. It has not skewed my coverage in the past when I've gone on the one fam I ever went on to Biloxi, Mississippi. I had a wonderful time playing in a pro-am with Mark Weavy. I still have the note in my desk that he sent me a month after that he didn't have to do. But I felt this trip was a little bit different, and I hadn't been on one of these kinds of trips since that one in Mississippi. So it had been 4 years. I was with NBC Sports at the time. I had really just taken on the opportunity a few months in, and it was a blast. Now it's a little bit different with a two-year-old to take that time away for something that is really rather gratuitous. But this was a special opportunity. So when the Adams folks called me and asked if I'd be interested, I jumped at the chance. Because playing with a two-time Masters winner is nothing to scoff at. I don't care who you are, how good you are at golf or not. That's a big deal. So, boarded the flight, went down there, and we had a lovely time. So, we went to this place called Delair Country Club, which is in Delray Beach. It's not Longer's Club. The Adams folks organized a separate venue for this event. And the idea was that Longer would give a demonstration of his pre-shot, pre-round routine, and how he gets ready for a tournament round. Then we'd have some lunch, and then we would play an 18-hole round with him, splitting the six riders into two groups with an extra person from the Adams family. That's not a joke. And nine holes would be played. Longer would play nine holes with the first group, then on the second nine would flip, and Longer would play with the other group for nine. So first he arrives, it's got to be like 11 o'clock, and he's expecting to give a demonstration for what amounts to six people. But really, he's giving a demonstration to like 30 people in the end, primarily because there was an email sent out to the members of the 27-hole facility / residential community that Longer was there, and he'd be giving a demonstration, not that it was not for them. But Longer took it gracefully and answered all of the questions, whether it came from us, the writers, or whether it came from the members that were in attendance. And you know what? I really appreciated that. I thought that was a very good sign, because there have been times where there are pros where they're brought in to do something, they have a certain expectation of how it goes, and almost inevitably in these kinds of things, they don't go as they're intended. They get ruffled, they get miffed, and you can tell they really don't feel like being there. And, you know, I don't think that's good. Longer took it in stride, and it was just so interesting to watch him go through his routine, not because it's a routine and it's what a guy who's won two Masters has done. That part didn't interest me. What interested me the most was that he took such a simple approach to the game. He boils down shots into things that are repeatable, and that's the direct converse of the kind of guy Seve Ballesteros was, who Longer mentioned several times during the demonstration that he did, that Seve was a field player. He just knew when to break his wrist and which way to break it to hit a cut, hit a draw, hit a low draw, do those kinds of shots that all have blown our minds over the years. It was more mind-blowing to know, and kind of the inclination of this, that he did it based on feel. He just inherently knew, cut it now, break it now, do this like this, and it worked. Longer is not like that. He found a system that works for him of changing grip position and head position and aim position to hit draws and cuts as big as he wants. And it was just so beautiful to watch, where he would just hit the draw, hit the cut. And even when he was trying to show how to hit bad shots, he hit the bad shots perfectly. So he showed perfectly how to hit a bad shot. So he had such control over his game that he could willingly hit a bad shot. There are not many people that can willingly hit bad shots, at least for them. So I thought that was absolutely stunning. What next was lunch. That lunch, I thought, was, along with dinner, really the best part of the trip. And I say that because it was an opportunity to get to know who Bernhard Langer is. Not a lot of people, I think, in this country, in the United States, appreciate what Langer's accomplished, either as a two-time Masters winner, as a prolific European Tour champion, as a guy who has almost two dozen Champions Tour wins, a handful of Champions Tour majors. 5 wins last year, 2 of them were majors. He won the Senior British Open by 13 shots to avenge a playoff loss to Mark Wiebe the year before in the same event. Are you kidding me? That's unbelievable. But what I really appreciated about Langer was his sensibility about things. That he came from a poor background in Germany, that he turned pro at the age 18 and was actually a club professional in Berlin. So he knows how to teach golf. He knows what to look for in the golf swing, which is perhaps why he is so great analytically when he walked up and down the line and critiqued folks' swings. He didn't spend a lot of time critiquing everything. He found the one or two things that you could improve upon if he found something. If he didn't, he just kept going. He said, look, I'm not going to change you. And that was very validating, by the way. But the conversation with Langer was great because he was so candid. It was like he's a normal guy who just happened to be a two-time major winner and is setting the world on fire on the Champions Tour. And he gave us a little bit of insight into what he loved most about the Masters. Obviously, that was a common topic. We talked about the Ryder Cup quite a bit. And we'll do stories about these. They're already sitting here in front of me. They're written. So you'll see them during Masters Week on Yahoo Sports and on Golf News Net. But he gave great stories about the Champions Dinner, what that Masters occasion is like for him every year, sitting next to Sandy Lyle. They've sat next together for a while. What it's like to have a Champions Dinner now that Ben Crenshaw is in charge as opposed to the late, great Byron Nelson. What he did when he was the champion who was hosting, when he served German food in 86, the year Jack Nicklaus won, and then in 94, when Jose Maria Olazabal won, he served Thanksgiving dinner because he wanted to give thanks. And he had some great stories as well about being in Butler Cabin. And he told a really funny story, at least I thought it was funny, where he said, well, in 85, they rushed me to Butler Cabin. I had won, 27 years old. And Horton, who's the chairman of the club, and Nance are in there, and they asked some questions, and the chairman asks Langer, well, what were you thinking as you were returning to the second nine? And Langer says, I looked at the leaderboard and went, Jesus Christ, how am I 4 shots behind Curtis Strange? Curtis Strange had a commanding lead, ultimately faded down the stretch, and Langer thrived and won the tournament. But he received so many letters from people who were angry that he used the Lord's name in vain. And then, a couple of years later, not too long after, he converted to Christianity, or not converted, became a stronger Christian. And so then he wins again in 93. They rush him to Butler Cabin. They ask him, well, how does this Masters feel, the second one, compared to the first? And Langer says, well, I have to give all praise to Jesus Christ, who's my Savior and has been so great for me. And so he joked that he was probably the only Masters winner ever to use Jesus Christ twice in Butler Cabin, which I thought was great. He had told some other wonderful golf stories. We'll post those too. But what I really enjoyed about playing the 9 holes that we did with Langer was that he made it, again, like on the range, look so simple. See the shot, hit the shot. Take what's in front of you. Don't try to do more than what's needed. And that kind of consistency and the lack of an up and down, which can be perceived as robotic, but he's not robotic. He smiles, he laughs, he jokes. It's just, he's got a dry wit, and he's not a very emoting guy. You know, he doesn't show a lot of emotion. He feels it, though. And each person who was a part of this trip as a writer gets a ride with Langer for 3 holes. So I have the final 3 holes of the total round and the final 3 of our 9. And what I really liked speaking with him was that, again, open book. And I had asked him if he had spoken with Paul McGinley about the 2014 Ryder Cup, if he had even gotten a courtesy call from McGinley to say, look, I'm not going to pick you, blah, blah, blah. Maybe a blow-off call. And he said, yeah, actually, McGinley called me twice. Called me once, reasonably early in the selection process, to say, I can't pick you. I can't add you to the team because there are too many young guys and I only have 3 picks, and all of those young guys deserve an opportunity. And Langer said he appreciated that. That meant a lot to him. That even if he was vaguely considered, he was considered, and he was given the respect to say, I can't pick you. Even though, unwittingly, Langer was playing so well that there had started a grassroots movement on Twitter to get him on the Ryder Cup team. I mean, as he was winning the Senior British Open by a baker's dozen, there were thousands of tweets of people like, Langer should be on the Ryder Cup team. Maybe he should be on the Ryder Cup team. That guy should be on the Ryder Cup team. 56-year-old man, 57-year-old man should be on the Ryder Cup team. He had no idea that was going on, and he smiled when I told him about it. But what I also really liked about him and McGinley, for that matter, is that they had a follow-up conversation. So they spent about 2 hours together talking about strategy for the Ryder Cup. And obviously, Langer didn't play. He wasn't an assistant captain. But his fingerprints are on that team a little bit. And he really loved his time as captain in 04, the kind of kill him with kindness campaign, which turned into the kill him campaign, because his charges won at Oakland Hills 18.5 to 9.5. And part of that was a terrible captaincy from Hal Sutton, and Langer was critical of Sutton putting Woods and Mickelson together. He's like, they're totally different players. They don't really like each other. I have no idea what he was doing trying to pull that off. And Langer smiled very humbly that the attempt to win over the fans and kind of quiet them down a little bit by being nice to them, by being reachable, by being approachable, by being likable. He liked that, and I think that means something. And I don't think that was something McGinley obviously had to go for in a home game in 14, but I think he appreciated the approach. But Langer was also very interesting talking about his playing days in the Ryder Cup, because as a German, he was the only German. Think of another good German golfer in Langer's era. And you could say Marcel Siem is great, but he's a little bit younger, not as fit these by any stretch. And you talk about Martin Keimer, a two-time major champion, and those guys are all fairly close. The Germans stick together. They are very good friends. However, Langer never really had a natural pairing. You know, with Ole Thabel, he could pair with Seve. That worked. Or you could do Sergio and Ole Thabel. That worked. The Ulstermen, they worked together, McDowell and McIlroy, despite their lawsuit differences. There's no German player to pair with them, so when he was asked if there was someone he liked playing with in the two-man matches, either the foursomes or the four-ball, he said, I didn't really care. I just wanted to play because I knew I could work with whoever. I got along with everybody very well, so it didn't matter who my partner was. We were going to figure it out. I really like that because that's a personal philosophy. I people, obviously, I like to spend time with, but I like to believe that I can try to find the good in anybody and get along with anybody. So I thought that was a very interesting viewpoint on the Ryder Cup, because we talk so often going into those matches about who's going to play with who's going to find a way to partner up, and all of those things. And Langer said, I don't care. I just want to play. You find me the guy you want to put me with, and I'll figure it out. And obviously he did. He was a great Ryder Cup player. So it was a wonderful trip, a wonderful day and a half, whirlwind down in Boca Raton. They came back here to a little bit of snow and rain in the D.C. area. And over the last 2 weeks, I've spent some time writing these stories and kind of reflecting on it. And just wanted to share it in the podcast here because I thought it was worthwhile. In case you don't read Golf News Net, in case you're just a Golf News Net radio listener, or you haven't seen on Yahoo the story I did over there, or you don't see the ones I do over the next couple of weeks. So I wanted to bring that to your attention. So thanks for indulging me. The other piece of the podcast this week, as mentioned at the top, is Tiger Woods. The guy is uncertain if he's going to play the Masters in 2 weeks. Actually, he'll start less than 2 weeks from now. And his friend slash public mouthpiece, Nota Begay III, went on 120 Sports with our buddy Scott Brewer. We've been on 120 Sports with him a couple times. He's great. He used to be a Golf Channel. I'm so happy that he's got this opportunity to be an anchor on air. And Nota told Scott that Tiger is 50-50 to play the Masters, and that's an improvement from 3 weeks ago, where in his assessment Woods would have been a 1 in 10 shot to play the Masters. Okay, great. That's lovely. That's all wonderful. Then Nota Begay goes on and says Tiger's game is great. It's in a great state. It's getting better all the time. So for me, in one sentence, it sounded like, okay, he's still struggling a little bit. He's got to wrangle with this decision to bring an imperfect game to Augusta National. And then on the other side, you have Begay saying, well, the game looks great. Well, which is it? And I don't think you can have both of those sentences coexist. You can't be 50-50 and your game be great. If your game's great, you're 100%. If your game's not 100%, then you're 50-50 or somewhere in there to play the Masters. If you're Tiger Woods. If you're anybody else, you don't even care. You could have a 5% chance of playing well. You go play the Masters because you don't know if you're ever going to do it again. Woods is a 4-time champion, 14-time major winner, with a heck of a lot of pride and a big ego. Doesn't want to go embarrass himself on that stage. A place where he has finished inside the top 6 when he's been healthy since 2004. So he knows how to play this golf course. So he's not going to go out there and embarrass himself. So if that means he's 50-50, that means there's more doubt than you believe. Because if you're Nota, you're going to round up a little bit, make it sound a little better than it is. Not worse than it really is. So that's my sentiment, that Tiger's not going to play the Masters, and he's not going to go out there and try to showcase a short game that maybe isn't all the way there yet. And then the next question is, if he's not going to play the Masters, when, if ever, is he going to play again? And of course, Tiger could surprise us all and say tomorrow, or today for that matter, I'm going to play the Masters and bring it. And that would be a really fascinating development, but I just don't think he's going to do it. So if he's not going to play the Masters, when's he going to play again? Well, he's probably going to take the month of April off. So April's out. So then May is when golf really starts to pick up again for most players. So he'll have an opportunity to play in the Players' Championship. And he could play at Quail Hollow. They play those in consecutive weeks. He would have to play a tournament in between the Masters and Cadillac Match Play Championship. Because he isn't even in the top 64 in the world. He's 96th in the world, and he's going to drop sub-100 going into the Masters. So he would have to have an incredible finish to get just into the 64. So he's not going to be able to do that. So the next time we could see him is the Players' Championship. Well, it's not like that's any better of a course for him to go try his luck. I know he's won it twice, but of the courses he regularly plays on the PGA Tour, he has the worst record at TPC Sawgrass. Hands down. He only has 2 wins and like 20 starts. So other than Riviera, which he gave up playing a long time ago, and the bulk of his starts were as an amateur in his college days or even pre-college days, that's not a good place to go showcase his game. Now, it's also not really a place that requires short game wizardry to the same extent Augusta National does. It's more of a second shot course. It's target golf, which Tiger is a little bit better than that, but his driving game is so terrible right now, and he can't find the planet, that he have a hard time really keeping up. But maybe he could get around if he's at least able to get from the tee to the fairway or somewhat close to the fairway and fairway to green. Okay, you can get around. That's not too bad. But it's not as demanding of a course, I don't think, for short game in some respects. And in others it is, because you find yourself with these really tight shots at times, and they're very delicate. But there's no more delicate of a chip shot than you'll find at Augusta National. So Tiger's got to find a short game. That's the bottom line. Tiger's got to find a short game that he feels comfortable with in tournament golf. And we've heard repeatedly from people in Tiger's camp, or people that have observed him, that he looks great on the range and then gets on the course and looks like dog crap. Well, that's going to be the problem here. If Tiger can't feel confident going to play tournament golf, he's not going to play tournament golf. But he's got to play tournament golf to feel confident enough he can play tournament golf. So, at some point, Tiger Woods has to pull the trigger and decide he's going to give this a shot and work through it, whatever technical problems he has, in particular, whatever mental block he's facing, whatever confidence issue he has. So
Could that be the Masters? Could that be the time he goes, well, forget it. I'm just going to do this and see what happens. Maybe. I think from a golf fan's perspective, not a golf writer's perspective, as a golf fan, I don't think people really care anymore if Tiger gets to 18 or 19. I think most golf fans have decided that's not happening. That's not in the cards. Tiger is almost 39 years old. He's lost the edge. And if you go to golfnewsnet.com, you can see our story on when greats lose the edge. He's lost the edge. He's not going to win five majors. He might win one or two more, if we're lucky, as golf fans. So if that doesn't happen, then he's just kind of ceremonial at this point. You hope he gets the Snead's 82 from 79 in terms of PGA Tour wins, or 83. Yeah, he can win four PGA Tour events. There's plenty of them that he, of course, that he loves that he routinely wins. He can do that. So this is, Tiger Woods is ceremonial at this point. He's like Palmer and Nicklaus and Player on the first tee with the first shot, the ceremonial tee shot. Those guys aren't playing, but they're important to the event because of their richness and history intertwined with the Masters. And Tiger Woods is important not only to the Masters, but your run-of-the-mill PGA Tour event because his history, much more recent, 14-time winner, 79-time PGA Tour champion, is so intertwined with the PGA Tour that if he can go out there and play respectably, people would love to see him play. And they love to get the occasional thrill of watching him get into contention and maybe win one here or there. But that's not who Tiger Woods is. Tiger Woods doesn't want to be ceremonial. He wants to be a contender. And he doesn't want to bother if he's not going to contend. So this is a really important stretch for Tiger Woods. And I don't know if Tiger Woods would say at 40, I'm done here. But you have to at least consider the possibility that for a guy as prideful as he is, as important it is to him to look good and play good when he's out there, not visibly struggle in front of millions of people, billions of people, how long would he keep this up if he can't find that short game? If he can't play Augusta National, if he can't play the Players, if he can't play the schedule of top-tier events that he wants to play because he's not ranked high enough anymore, why bother? What's it matter? So this is an important time for Woods, and I don't think you can understate this. This is the time where we find out whether Woods plays until he's 50 or he plays until he's 40. And right now I would tell you, if you made me guess where he would stop playing the PGA Tour, it'd be 40 or 41, not 49 or 50. Because if he can't find that short game, there's no point for him in being out there. That'll do it for us this week on the show. Sorry for the lateness of the program this week. We really appreciate you listening to it. You can email me, Ryan, at thegolfnewsnet.com. Check us out on our website, golfnewsnet.com, or on Devil Ball Golf on Yahoo Sports, sports.yahoo.com. You can follow me on Twitter, at Ryan Ballingy, as well. Follow Golf News Net on Twitter and Facebook, twitter.com/golfnewsnet. Next week on the show, hopefully we'll have a sense of whether Tiger is actually going to play in the Masters and what that means for the future of the game. We'll also find out who wins the windswept so far, Valero Texas Open, and whether that gives someone any kind of momentum heading into not only the Houston Open, but in particular, the year's first major. I'm so excited. Until next week, I'm Ryan Ballingy saying thanks for listening, and we'll catch you next time on the 19th Hole Golf Show.
COTA has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at COTA.com/service changes. That's COTA.com/service changes.
Skyline's new chicken chili is here. Now you can enjoy that legendary Skyline taste with a new protein option. Try Skyline's chicken chili on Waze, Coney's, and all your Skyline favorites. Feeling good. It's Skyline time.
If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.